Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. The pass complete to his tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has done 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? It is episode 11 of Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. What's going on, man?
Good times, bro. Good
so time. I've got something I want to run by you. I want to see if you think you could do this.
Yeah.
So I made a decision yesterday because I was going through my closet and I got too much crap.
Yeah.
Right? Like I sometimes look in there like this is ridiculous. Like you accumulate stuff. Some stuff I buy, but some stuff you get for free. I am going to go 1 year without purchasing any new bit of clothing item.
What?
Shoes. Clothes.
Impossible.
Anything.
Impossible.
You're saying it can't be
it
done?
It cannot be done.
Why not?
It's human. It's impossible. Like, I see the shoes that you come in with.
Well,
every
exactly.
Day.
Like, I have enough shoes to last me a year where I don't need another pair.
The need is one thing. Like, the impulse to go out and get something new and fresh is a whole different ballgame. And you have no self-control when it comes to that.
I am going to use discipline. Here's the one caveat. Here's the one thing I'll give myself a little bit of leeway. I'm going to sell some stuff because I got too much junk. I'm going to sell it on eBay. I'm going to put it online. Maybe we can do it through the show account. We'll even pump it out there. Get some. Right. I'm going to use that money if I have that urge to shop.
So no, that's a huge caveat. That's not doing what you said you were
going
to do.
All right, no, I don't think it is. I think it's no new money.
No new money is going towards clothes.
So you, now that we're partners in this venture together, this podcast, you have to hold me accountable.
Are you a hoarder or are you a liquidator? Because I'm a liquidator. Like
my wife
in there,
is a liquidator.
Is she?
She's clearing out everything, which drives me nuts.
But so I'm you're like my wife.
Yeah.
You guys like to hang on to it. Like,
yeah.
I'll go in if I haven't worn it in like 6 months, it's got to go. I'll be pissed like 2 months later because I want to wear it, but I get rid of it.
See, I'm going back to the well because, styles come back around again.
Yeah, that's true.
Fashion
it's cyclical.
It is. Cyclical. All right, we got a huge show to get to. We have a little MVP discussion. Uh-huh. What type of stuff do you look for in an MVP? And we're going to do our top five. It's Wednesday, so we got to do a top five. But first, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest NBA players of all time. He had an interview with The Guardian, and he had a pretty eye-opening quote. He said, "The NBA has surpassed the NFL as the League of America's future." What do you think?
I tend to agree, and I know that's my NBA bias, and people are going to point to that, but I agree with a lot of the points that Kareem made. I feel like the NBA as a league on a whole is more progressive than the NFL. They are out in front of a lot of these social causes that are intertwined now with sports. I feel like the NFL is reactive, and the NBA to a degree is proactive about it. Our stars are much better across the social media spectrum, like LeBron and D Wade and Chris Paul and James Harden, like Russell Westbrook. Not to mention that I feel like the in-game experience for NBA fans is better than that of like NFL fans. Like the merger with Nike as the new company, the apparel company, and some of the things they offer in terms of like the chips and the jerseys and they've just made it even better than, and I believe that it already was better than the NFL's. But I just think when you put all of that together, and you have facial recognition, like with a lot of our stars, like who the eighth man on the bench is for the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, half these guys are wearing helmets. You wouldn't know them if they were standing next to you in the line for the movie. So I think he's onto something. I don't know that it's already surpassed it, but I think it is the league of the future.
So you gave all those reasons, excellent reasons.
Yeah.
You know what you didn't mention?
What's that?
Safety.
Yeah.
The injury aspect. I was doing Mike and Mike a couple years ago, and I had some comments about the NFL, and I felt like there's a war on football, right? And it got mocked on social. The guys that, pardon my take, had some fun with it. But I feel like there is a very real attack on football. I don't know where it comes from specifically.
Right.
Whether it's intellectuals, people that are smart and look at this game, there are a bunch of guys beating their heads against it. Doctors, I don't know where it's coming from, but I feel like the sport is under attack. I said 2 years ago again that the NFL would be done within our lifetime, within the next 20 years. I think I'm willing to go out there and say it could be even sooner than that now. Now, you're still seeing deals signed. Verizon just had a $2.5 billion deal for rights to the NFL. You're still going to see a lot of money thrown at it. But the thing that I think will do it, we're seeing more than ever more awareness of how dangerous and how violent the game is. We just talked about who was it that got hurt last week? It was Ryan Shazier when he hurt his back, and he's, you know, still in the hospital. We just had Tom Savage this past weekend who gets hit and he's shaken. That was a huge deal. They're talking about concussion protocol. But the fear for me and why I think the NFL is in serious trouble is I think less and less children are playing. And that was something that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cited. There was an ESPN study that said basketball is the most popular sport amongst youth. It's great. It's easy to play. It's cheap. You don't have to buy pads.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about your kid getting concussed or his back, you know, having a spinal cord injury, which are very real issues that the NFL has and the NBA doesn't.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because that should have been the first thing I said. But it's interesting because I have kids that play both. And I just recently came off of a football season with them, and we're now in the middle of basketball season. And there is, I mean, you can feel it in a basketball gym, like the excitement that these kids have for the game, for the stars, for the product that's being put out by these stars. Like, it's a passion. Like, and football, when you're out there on the field, you don't feel the same level of passion. And I get it, you're outdoors, so like when you're in a gym, like acoustically, everything's contained and you feel a level of excitement better than you might outside. But I look at the kids' faces. Kids, when they're leaving a football field, look drained. They do.
Yeah.
They look drained. And every day, through the last 3 years or so, I've had to like drag my kid to football. And now
to practice. Right.
They don't like to practice. They love the game,
right,
but they don't like to practice. Basketball's not like that. Like, kids are like ready to go. Like, my kids come, I work with a local high school. My young boys are in the gym every night on the side basket, getting it in. And they play both. People ask me, are they better at basketball or football? I don't know. It's like 50-50. But the passion and the connection that they have with the NBA is much different than it is with the NFL.
I didn't start playing football until my junior high school. Mm-hmm. And I remember going out. I remember this like it was crazy because I remember going out after school and guys dreading practice, like hating it.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why are we all playing if it's so bad?
Right.
And it was brutal. Like, practice is not fun. Guys are banging heads. I remember going to basketball practice and loving it. Now, there were some drills. There was a lot of drill work stuff that was, but like, you couldn't wait. Like, when are we scrimmaging?
Right.
What time is scrimmage? What time was, we got to do drills for an hour, but we get to scrimmage in an hour, right?
Right.
Okay, so we'll get to play. So I was like, all right, that's cool. Baseball, a little bit boring, but for different reasons. But most part, guys had fun out there, but it was a little slower sport.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to, like, it wasn't the dread that come over. And that's at every level. College, I remember walking out to practice with guys. And you'd see offensive and defensive linemen, these 300-pound guys, just walking like as slow as like snails on their way to the field because they were dreading what was going to go down in the next 2 hours. Really? It is not fun. Nobody likes to practice football. And the games are fun, yes, but now you're starting to see the risk that's coming with it. And I think there's a movement, and I think this might happen within the next 3 or 4 years, where kids are not going to be allowed to play tackle football before high school. And I think that's a very serious movement. If that happens, I don't know what that means for the future of the game. But I think we'll see the end of the NFL and the end of football as we know it in our lifetimes.
Interesting.
All right, let's move on to the sport of the future, then, which is the NBA. Because I agree with you. There are some great superstars. They're more socially aware.
Yeah.
They're great on social media. One guy who's a little bit flying under the radar, one of the more shy superstars in the NBA, is Kawhi Leonard. He finally returns to the Spurs, but they lost in a game to the Mavs. Let's hear what LaMarcus Aldridge had to say about it.
It looked good. You know, it's going to take time, to get back to the Kawhi that we know. But I thought he looked good, first game in a long time, looked comfortable out there, making plays. And, that's going to be him.
All right. So everybody's been talking about the Houston Rockets. They've been on fire. Golden State Warriors, still super team. They've had some injuries, but they're still right there in the 2 seed. Spurs are in the 3 seed. Can they challenge those top two for a legit chance to win the Western Conference?
No. I mean, they could challenge Houston maybe, but I don't see them challenging Golden State. The Spurs are going to be what the Spurs are. They're always a top-tier Western Conference team. And I shouldn't say no unequivocally because, anything could happen. But just, my gut watching one team versus the other, there's not enough firepower in San Antonio to beat Golden State over a course of a series. Now, Popovich can scheme them up with the best of them and put them in positions to maybe, beat them here or there, but not over the long haul, right? Like, Golden State's going to win that. LaMarcus Aldridge, what you didn't hear in that interview, what he wanted to say was, I've been playing great. I've been playing fantastic, and I've held the fort down, please don't come back and jack this mojo up, Kawhi Leonard. That's what you didn't hear him say in the interview. And I hope for his sake and for Kawhi's sake, because they need to figure out how to be 1A and 1B there. Kawhi had a fantastic year last year. Clearly the face of the franchise in San Antonio now. And by no fault of his was it that LaMarcus Aldridge couldn't figure out, you know, how to fit in last year. But he has figured it out in your absence. And now you've got to figure out, if you're Kawhi, how to come back and fit in with LaMarcus. It can still be your team. But, like, LaMarcus is averaging 22. Like, he's 5 points more per game than he was last year. He's averaging about 4 more shot attempts. He's about 20% better from the field. Like, that is not a coincidence. Like, there's clearly something going on between the two of them on the court. Doesn't mean that they don't like playing with each other or that it can't work. But they've got to figure it out to be that viable team in the West that you're asking me. They both got to be firing on all cylinders.
Is LaMarcus Aldridge soft, like, mentally? Because I look back at him and I see what he did in Portland. Like, he had to shut down his Twitter account. Like, he seems like he's a little bit of a basket case mentally.
Yeah.
And I think you cannot be that and be one of the best players in the league with as much skill set, as strong a skill set as he has, and be a great championship-worthy team if you're mentally soft.
I don't know that he's mentally soft. I think he's different. You know, some of those guys are just aren't exactly what you would expect out of a superstar, right? It's not always straightforward and to the point with them. Like, he's just a little different, but I don't think he's soft. I played against LaMarcus. You don't score, rebound, and produce the way he has over a career, and be soft. He's not soft. Now, relationships are really important in basketball sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what kind of like person he is. He seems like a great dude, but I don't know if he's like one of those dudes that's so standoffish that you don't really get to know him and he doesn't let you in his personal life. And sometimes, you know, you don't always have to love the guy that you're playing with, but it helps. Mm-hmm. You know, it does. When, especially in a game that's as fluid as basketball and chemistry is so important, it really helps if you guys are buddies. And I can't speak to that, but I don't think he's soft.
The Spurs, to me, are the team that everybody always overlooks every single year. Last year, as great as the Warriors were, the Spurs were still setting home winning records, yeah, you know, that we've never seen before in the NBA. But again, I tend to agree with you. I still think it's going to be the Warriors. I think the Rockets, Warriors are more likely in a Western Conference Finals. And frankly, I think it'd be more fun to watch for sure than it would be the Spurs. But we'll have to see what Pop can get going in the second half of the season. All right, Madison Square Garden, one of the best places in sports to play. It was Lonzo Ball's first game there. They're facing the Knicks. It was an exciting game. I watched some of it. Here were some highlights.
Here's Caldwell Pope. Porzingis in pursuit, and Hall throws it down. What a pass from Caldwell Pope. And Lonzo Ball with the finish. Lakers by 2. Jack to Porzingis, steps back. It's good. Kristaps Porzingis with 29, and we're tied again.
So it was fun. A lot of young superstars on the court. The energy in the crowd was garden-like. Right. Like, it's what you would expect to see in New York City when they're playing. Lonzo had and the Lakers had a great third quarter. Had some highlights there. His dad, of course, is wearing red so you can spot him. He's jumping on the sideline, like going at it with Spike Lee. I watched the game because I had a vested interest, and it actually ended up on the losing side of that one late due to a controversial call. But what are your impressions of these? I feel like we haven't talked about the Knicks very much, and we have talked about Lonzo Ball a ton. If the season ended now, Knicks are on the outside, they're in the ninth seed. Do you think they can make a push to get into the playoffs? And if they can they make a run?
Yes and no. Like, why not make a run in the Eastern Conference? I mean, who can't make a run in the Eastern Conference at this point? So I think they could, whether they will or not. I would say, yeah, I think they could slide into the 8th spot. They can't make a run at it. I mean, they're not going to beat the better teams in the Eastern Conference. But that's a win for you this year. Like, getting rid of Carmelo and you know, the Tim Hardaway situation, like, people debated whether that money was warranted. I tend to think it was. You got Michael Beasley coming back from, where was he, China? I mean, that, you know, for them making the 8th spot, if they could squeeze in, that's a win for New York. But they're not going to challenge. Kristaps Porzingis is – like, he's nasty. He's a bad man. Like, at that size and that length, he really does remind me of a young Dirk, but just with a little bit more dog in him than Dirk had at the time. Yeah. I played with Dirk, like, in his third year, I think it was, maybe fourth. And he was cold, but he wasn't like as tough as he became. Like, Kristaps seems to have a little edge on his shoulder.
He's not
already
afraid.
No, he's not. Like, he's coming at you. And the Lakers, they've been playing well. Like, you don't expect young teams to go on the road and pull out wins and, like, in Philly and in Charlotte and be in overtime in the Garden. Like, you just expect their, you know, their focus to be all over the place, and they seem to be pretty focused. I like that Lonzo showed you a little bit of personality last night. You're on the big stage. I feel like he's like almost too reserved and too cool for school at times. You know, you throw him that lob, he smashes it, and he gives the camera a little glimpse into like who he is as a person. I like that. I think he's coming out of his shell. So for two relatively bad teams in the Garden, I thought it was a good show.
Yeah, I thought so too. Well, Lonzo, as far as progression, and I feel like he's the most talked about rookie because of his dad, because of all that. I think his dad, that's the desire. You're building a brand.
Of course.
So he's going to have a ton of scrutiny on him. Where would you assess his game right now? Because I don't think it's changed that much. I think we've seen ups and we've seen downs. We've seen him get hot and cold, but he's still kind of just a rookie.
Look, numbers can lie, but he's at 9.7 rebounds and 7 assists per game. The rebounds and the assists, like Debo and I were talking about, those are solid, solid numbers for a rook. 9 points isn't terrible, except you look at he's shooting 33% from the floor. Now, rookies typically, when they come in, like there's an adjustment to the size and speed, so you expect, especially guards at times, to struggle with their field goal percentage earlier in their career. I'll forgive him some of that. I think he's okay. You know, I don't think he's, you know, even if you asked him, I don't think he feels like he's playing as good as he could play, but I don't think he's playing as bad as people want to make him out to be playing. I think he's doing just fine.
The guy that he gets compared a lot to, Jason Kidd, his rookie season, Jason Kidd averaged 11, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds. So similar type numbers, a little bit more production from a scoring aspect. And I think that's my biggest concern with Lonzo moving forward is that shot. Can he fix it? Can he get it off quicker? Can he adjust his technique? And I don't know. I don't know if you can do that without seriously having a regression first. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's, if he does decide to go with a new motion.
Well, I don't think you go with a new motion. You hit the nail on the head. It's quicker. Like, there was a play late. It was in overtime, as a matter of fact. First play for the Lakers. He came off of a high screen and roll, and Frank Ntilikina went under the screen and roll. And Lonzo made the right call, which was to pull, right? Like, if you go under a screen and roll as a pro, you're a ball handler. You're supposed to shoot the shot. It took him so long to get it off that Ntilikina got back in the play, and he had to fake like he got fouled. The motion is too slow. So I would reference, like, if I were him, I would get with the kid. I forget his name. He's from Cleveland. He played for Sacramento for all that time. You know his name, man? No. What's his name? He had a shot just like that. Dang, why can't
In the NBA?
Yes.
Kevin Martin?
Kevin Martin. And he was a nightmare. He's a nightmare to guard. Great call. Same shot across his face. Drew all kind of fouls shooting it. Scored a ton of points in the NBA. No matter where he was known as a scorer. Get with a guy like that in the offseason. Pick his brain. Have some workouts, right? Like, you don't have to change your motion, but you got to get quicker with the release and a little craftier.
All right, you said something about Porzingis, Kristaps. Like, I think we all appreciate what he does, but you've seen some pretty similar skill set guys.
Yeah.
Who would you rather start a franchise with if you had Joel Embiid, Karl-Anthony Towns, or Kristaps Porzingis?
Cat.
You would.
I would.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I don't know. I just...
He's a special kid. I mean, he's a very rare, like, he's mature.
Yeah.
He's kind of different. I don't think he's into the lifestyle, the NBA lifestyle. He just wants to be great.
Yeah, I get that sense from him, too. And not knowing any of them personally, like, that would be probably the deciding factor for me, because they all have, like, just gifts beyond gifts, right? And I think Kat's versatility, I think he's better with the ball than Kristaps. I think he's got more range. It's probably a little more versatile than Joel, even, and more fluid. I
wouldn't touch Embiid because of the injury history. Like, as great as he is when he's healthy,
yeah,
I'm not
going to
take that risk.
100%.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's do some MVP discussion. Because the NFL, it's been a hot topic this year. Who should it go to? Is it Tom Brady? Is it Carson Wentz? Drew Brees? Russell Wilson? Like, there have been some very viable candidates. I think the thing that's interesting to me, because I think Tom Brady, there's a little bit of fatigue with Tom Brady because he's been around. He's 40. He's had the MVP twice.
Right.
I think there's a little bit of that LeBron effect. Like, people don't want to see him do it. But I think there's absolute appreciation for him. So he is the favorite in the clubhouse, minus 200. Second, according to Vegas, is Carson Wentz at plus 450, who is done.
Right.
Would you have a problem voting for him, even though he misses the last three games in a postseason run for the Eagles?
If the Eagles fell apart at this point, I would not have a problem voting.
Right, that would almost make it more of a case for him.
Absolutely. Because I think we look at that MVP thing through, like, the wrong prism. Like, it's the most valuable player to your team. It's not the best player on the team with the most wins, but that's who we typically give it to, right? Like, even NFL, NBA, that's who gets it. It's the best player on the team with the most wins, but that's not what the MVP, in my opinion, should be. So I wouldn't have a problem if it was apparent that the Eagles couldn't play without him.
I agree with you. He's already got MVP-type numbers. Like, he doesn't even have to do that much more. But if you went sheerly by which guy is doing the most for their team, and his team's not that great, is Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Like, when I watch him play, and we talked about him a couple weeks ago, yep. he's accounting for 90-something percent of their production, like their points on the board, and how many times he scrambles around literally and puts the team on his back. I think he deserves consideration, too. Ultimately, I probably would go with Brady. And I know he's coming off his worst game, and I know people are trashing him. This is what's driving me nuts about Brady. I think people are wanting so bad to say, there's the end. Look, he's 40. He's done.
Yeah.
They're almost rooting for it to happen. Like, yeah, he had a bad game. Yeah, there were a ton of guys hurt on his team. It was just a bad game. I'm not looking at Tom Brady now and saying, he's done. There's the end. There he's 40 now. The age is going to catch up to him. That drives me nuts because I feel like people are trying to be the first one that said, there it is. There's the end.
Right.
And just sit back and watch him play.
You're just throwing stuff at the board to see what sticks. Like, what? Everyone has a bad game. Yeah. Everyone. 40, 22, 30. Like, teams have bad games. That was an anomaly the other night in Miami. And his, like, statistically, if you look at his performances in Florida, he struggles in Hard Rock or whatever it was back then. He doesn't play great there. If you don't think Tom Brady is going to bounce back, are they at Heinz Field this week?
Where is that game? Is that home or away?
I think it's in New England.
Pittsburgh.
It's in Pittsburgh. If you're crazy if you don't think Tom Brady's not going to come out and look like a savage.
And
next
he
weekend.
Owns the Steelers.
Bro, you're
like
crazy.
His story, like talking about struggling against the Dolphins, he owns the Steelers. So I'm with you. And I think that'll be telling.
Yep.
I think we'll get to see where he is because he did seem out of sorts. I think it's expected to have that every once in a while. If you had five MVPs that you played with, two while you were on the team with them.
Yeah.
And Iverson
says something about me. No.
Exactly. Like you're the guy that's helping them do it. Like, hey, they're only as good as their teammates. Do you think it should ever be someone beside a quarterback?
Yeah.
It totally should, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was looking at the list and then I forgot the guys like Sean Alexander and then won it, but yeah, I absolutely think. I mean, quarterbacks clearly when they're good or when they're really bad could make or break your season. Like, there's no denying that, but absolutely, especially running backs. Defensively, sometimes I have a hard time because I don't know. That's a hard one for me. But
yeah.
But running backs, like receivers that completely change like games and seasons, I'd have no problem.
I think because I think the quarterback is the most valuable position in all of sports.
Yeah.
But I think in order for somebody, a running back, to do it, they have to do something historically great. Like when Adrian Peterson won in 2012, he was challenging Eric Dickerson's all-time rushing record. So I think that's the type of numbers you have to put. If it was a defensive player, maybe it's here like Strahan had when he broke the all-time sack record. But other than that, it's just you can only make so much. You know, you see J.J. Watt, he has an impressive year. And there are times when you look at him and you're like, man, if he moves around to a different team, he could take that team to the playoffs from the defensive side of the ball because it's creating turnovers, scooping scores, pick sixes, those types of things. But they should just be the quarterback all the time. former MVP, Aaron Rodgers, is now cleared to return. So we talked about that on Monday. Should he come back?
Should he not? Don't do it.
He's coming back.
Don't do it.
They're going to make a run. They're 7-6. And oh, by the way, he's coming back against the Carolina Panthers, who are really good. He's got to do it on the road. Then he plays the Vikings and then on the road against the Lions. So very impactful games where, if they win out, they're in. Should he have come back?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess you come back. I personally, if I was a player, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I want to come back. Like, I want to come back because I think we can get this thing done. If I'm a franchise or if I am in the top brass of that franchise, don't come back. Like, realistically, are we winning a Super Bowl this year? Like, is that a Super Bowl roster? I'm asking you.
If you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a chance at the Super Bowl. Especially this year when you look around, like the Eagles, they were the best team in the NFC, starting to separate themselves. Carson Wentz gets hurt. They're susceptible now. You've got Minnesota playing in your division who they've looked great, but they got Case Keenum. He's not Aaron Rodgers. Even around the other side, now the AFC teams are they're still at Big Ben. You got the Steelers lighting it up and you got the Patriots. Could you, in a one game scenario, I put Aaron Rodgers against anybody and say, give him the ball and he can beat anybody. He's that good and that impactful.
All right. So they've got to play at
Carolina.
At Carolina.
Who's really good. Top three in most defensive categories.
That's scary.
Then they play home against the Vikings, another defense, which is really good.
Then away.
And then away against the Lions.
That gets you in, right?
Yeah.
Like, potentially.
Yeah. Yes.
But then you got to go on the road against who in the playoffs? Who would you have in the NFC? Like, you'd have...
It depends.
It would probably be the Rams at this point if they win the West, or it could
again,
be the
team with
could
very
be the
young
Saints.
Team against Drew Brees and the Saints. Like, I just put, I think.
But this is all on the road. You're talking about one home game in the midst of, like, that's five,
yeah, but that
six
might be better getting out of Green Bay in that crappy weather, especially if you're hurt.
Hey, look, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm always one of those guys that says, you know, err on the side of, like, protecting the player and protecting your future. But
he's got – so he's financially, he's secure.
Yeah.
When is his deal up? He might be up pretty soon because he's – but he's made a boatload of money.
No, it's not even about the money necessarily. But, I mean, like, you've got a shattered – like, you just described all of the hardware that's in his –
13 screws in his shoulder.
You shatter that again. Like, what is the perspective for your career having any longevity?
So they still need help, Debo. If they went out, they still need help.
Yeah.
They still need the Seahawks to lose.
To the Rams.
And they're two games behind the Panthers. So if they lose, he's got two more years left on his deal. I think he's a competitor. Again, I said this on Monday. I think it all depends on his relationship with the medical staff.
Right. You've
got to trust that doctor and say, if I fall on this, is it going to re-injure? Is it going to shatter again? Am I going to break it again?
They can't promise you that. You know that. You know that. Like, you know they can't promise you that.
But he can tell you how are you in the rehab process. This is one where I think he's going to have to protect himself. This is where, but I trust him as a veteran player who likes to scramble around. I think he'll throw it away. I think he'll slide earlier than you've ever seen.
So,
but sometimes there's just blindside hits you can't help.
Listen, if you're gonna play, then please look like Tom Brady did, which I should have touched on a second ago when the Dolphins were getting after him. That cat would come out of, like, his play action fake and just, like, slide and throw it into the ground in one motion.
And
like,
you probably will. You will. Yeah. Peyton Manning was excellent at that his last couple
hilarious.
Years. He would go down, like, within 5 feet. The guy wouldn't even be close to him. He's down. Like, he's not even trying. And I think that'll be harder.
I hate it.
It'll be hard for Aaron because he's a scrambler. Like, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning can't run around. So it'll be a challenge for him. It's time to have some fun, Rajah.
All righty.
Let's get to our weekly. It's Wednesday, so we got to do our top five. Devin Hester just announced his retirement. Dude was one of the most exciting players to watch, returning the football, Hurricane.
Yep.
Incredible return skills. You almost felt like you had to watch the TV. So our boy Debo came up with a list. What are your top five all-time must-watch players? Like, this is one where if you're out with your lady, you'd be like, hey, I got to get back to a TV. You know, like, you got to get home. If your kids are around playing, they're like, daddy, daddy. No, kids, go outside. Go outside and play. I need to watch this game.
Yes.
Who are your top five all-time must-watch players, athletes?
All right. That's a tough one. There are a lot of – oh, man. But I probably show my age in this because I'm biased to, like, the era that I grew up in. But any late 90s Hurricane football team, all of them.
That's a homer must move
watch,
right there.
Must watch.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to go with – and this is in no particular order. This is just top five that I came up with. John McEnroe.
Oh, really?
Like, I love a little bit of, like controversy and a little bit of, like, crazy and just – like, he was a dope tennis player when my first sport was playing tennis.
Yeah.
But just what he might do to, like, a chair ump or the flip out or whatever, I that was much watch TV for me.
And you played a little tennis.
I did. That was my first sport. So, like, I like John Mack. Tiger Woods, like, on a Sunday, black and red, fist pumping.
Yep.
Like, I'm all in on Tiger. I feel like I got to put, like, a pro football player, and it was a toss up between Barry Sanders and Deion Sanders. Right, like prime time or Barry. I went with Barry because like I like to see people get juked and he was like electric with that. And then it's no brainer for number one is MJ.
Yeah, that was my number one too.
No
That's
brainer.
Like a no brainer for me. All right, so my top five. I felt like I had to do something current, so I was trying to think around. And this one, I'm not even so sure it comes in for what he accomplishes in the ring.
Right.
But it might be for what he accomplishes in the press conferences. Conor McGregor.
Conor.
To me, that dude is the most entertaining athlete we have right now.
Yeah,
and I don't know if we see him fight again because even Dana White, the head of UFC, has said, hey, if you got $100 million, it's a lot harder to get punched in the face.
Right.
But he was much – and he backs it up. Like, he's gone in there and he's done it, played in, you know, not only been MMA but also boxed. Like, this dude got some entertainment factor.
I don't know if he boxed.
Oh, he was good. He was legit.
He was
– I want to see him get another shot at Floyd. I think he could take some. I think he could take Money Mayweather, and I think Mayweather's a little nervous after five or six rounds. All right, number four for me was Deion. Primetime. And Barry was an outstanding. That was a good choice. I overlooked that one, but Deion, the fact that he did other things with playing both ways, and you could throw in the baseball when he's taking the helicopter back and forth to the World Series when he's on the Braves. That was incredible. Number three, I got another one. I think this is one you forgot about. Mike Tyson.
Oh.
Because Mike Tyson was one where we actually, Bobby Bowden, we used to get some of his fights the night before our game so we could watch them.
Yeah.
He was, and it might only last 90 seconds.
It's a great call.
But his entry to the ring when he comes out there, towel just cut and put over his head and the black pants and black boots.
Yeah.
That dude was scary to watch. And then my two and one are the same as yours, Tiger and MJ. Yeah. But I think it's crazy. I don't think you would, if you would have asked anybody 20 years ago, like, nobody would have said Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer. Like, golf fans would have.
Right.
But I think a lot more people would have said Tiger.
Yeah.
And, like, just casual people would say, hey, yeah, I want to see Tiger Woods get out there and do it.
What? Why? Like, what do you attribute that to?
I think it transcends a lot of things that golf, it's not very relatable because you think of it as a rich white person's sport.
Yeah.
And I think Tiger brought, you know, he brought diversity to the sport. He brought excitement. He was fist bumping. He did have a glare, like a game face, and before it's the gentleman's sport, like, hey, nice shot, golf clap. Like, he's out there having fun.
He
like,
brought some swag to
it. Yeah, he absolutely did. So I can appreciate that. Debo, anybody feel like we left off?
I mean, for me, Iverson is my go-to just growing up.
True.
And guy you played with. Steve Nash is another one on that list.
Yeah, Nasty was nice, too. Yeah.
I mean, if you want top five of all time, it's pretty hard to, like,
Magic.
Know.
Magic was in my, like, I had a few that just barely made the cut. Like Magic Showtime, do you remember like something?
Yeah,
something
for sure.
Larry Legend.
Yeah.
Like, really.
Like, those games to me were more about, like, if you said rivalries that I had to watch, it was Lakers Celtics all day long. Had to tune in for that one.
Roger, what about like Mike Trout, Bryce Harper?
Trout, what, fisherman? They're fishermen we're talking about?
It's hard to say baseball player. Think of, is there any baseball player that you would say I have to tune in and watch?
Who he hit it, like, they're like,
Bryce Harper might be one.
That home run race that year.
Oh, yeah, with Sammy Sosa.
Like, we were missing, like, pickup basketball games to watch some of that stuff. Like, it was exciting back then. But generally speaking, on a regular year.
Barry Bonds, when he was chasing the all-time home run record, and I remember they were breaking in on ESPN. Like, they'd be in a college hoops game or that, like some other sport, and they would break in the game and say, hey, let's go live now. I think it might have been NFL or something. It was nuts when he was getting late in that season when they were trying to check him out and do that. But that would be a good option as well. All right, let's do some topics to finish off the show. Let's have some fun.
All right, so we loved the snow game in Buffalo this past weekend. Kickers probably don't, and I don't think Colts kicker Adam Vinatieri does at all, because that game potentially could cost him $500,000. He had an incentive in his contract that he has to hit above 90% of field goals on the year, and he gets that $500K. He missed two field goals in that game, bringing him down to 88%. So did you guys ever have incentives in your deal, or could you see where it factors in to help people play?
Yeah, that sucks. that's one of those where I'm asking, hey, is it a missed field goal if I slip before I attempt the field goal, right? So I don't have to give up the 500K on a miss. But yeah, I had one in Phoenix. I always hated incentive-laden deals, like, because I felt like, you know, they were conflicts of interest at times. I had a deal in Phoenix where if I averaged 15 points a game, it got me like an extra 100,000 or something from Nike.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at like 14 point, was I like, are you looking it up? Was I 14.9 in 06? Or 07, one of those years, or 14.8.
And you had to get 15?
And I needed to get, like, 15. But I was close. Like, it was, what was it?
2005, 2006, and 2006, 2007, 14.7 points a game both years.
Right. So I'm close, and I know this, like, with a month and a half, 2 months left in the season. And it becomes, like, do I shoot a couple extra shots and take us out of rhythm? Or, no, real talk. Or do I just play to win? And I was always, like, I don't need that. Like, I want to win I want to try to win a championship.
Right.
So I never bought into that. But, you know, there were people who I'm sure were playing. Like, I played with some guys, big guys, that if you tried to steal one of their rebounds, they'd get angry at you. Like, they would literally be yelling at you and MFing you to get out of here, taking rebounds away from them. And you knew why they wanted all those rebounds. It was for the actual stat. I played with players that knew, and I could never understand this, how in God's name do you know your whole stat line in the third quarter, having played, you know, 27 minutes, banging it out down there under the boards, but they have it in their head because there's a lot of incentives on the line?
Isn't it easy, though, in every sport now, because every stadium, every arena, they have your stats somewhere on the arena. Like, they have your passing stats, they have your shooting stats.
Now they do. Back then, it wasn't
they
as easy.
Didn't,
like,
so they were,
you
they
had
were
to
watching.
Either get a stat sheet or you had to be calculating it in your head, which was fantastic. Like, it just blew me away.
I love the incentives. I think they're great for the game. I think guaranteed money is bad for the product. I think guys get – and, like, you see Russell Westbrook get 280, whatever it was. You see Alex Rodriguez get, you know, back-to-back $250 million deals. They're getting that no matter what.
Yep.
So I think some guys shut it down. And you always see guys raise their level of play when it's a contract year, and they're like, oh, contract year, that's why he's giving this, you know, all this effort. If you had guys going out there that had to produce to earn their paycheck, I think you would get a better product on the court. Now, I do think it would bring in some conflicts. Like the individual scoring, I think that could present a problem. Because then, and then you'll get guys fighting on the team. Like, are you kidding me? I need that shot to end the game. I had some incentives in my one contract I had for the Giants. And it was funny because there was like MVP, the league incentive. Yeah. And I was like, I never sniffed that. But there was also some playing. When I was a backup, there was some incentives written that if I played 50% or more of the snaps, I would get a certain amount of pay. If I paid 25%, because if you had to fill in for four games, they would try to get your play. I love that.
Right.
Because if I had to play, I didn't want to be making backup money. I wanted to make starter money. So right. there are ways that I think incentive-laden contracts could be really beneficial.
I like team incentives.
Yeah.
I don't like individual goal incentives. You know, like, but one of mine was making all defensive teams. That doesn't take away from, like, the team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that, at the end of the day, that's a team thing. But those ones, when you're talking about purely, like, you know, points per game and stuff like that, you in the NBA, man, if you just incentivize everybody on points per game, man, the product would, they'd be playing harder, but only to get them points. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't know if I should tell you this, but in 07, all you needed all season was 27 more points, and you would have hit that incentive.
I know. Like, I had calculated that at one point because, like, my agent, you know, made me aware of the fact. And I was like, it doesn't make that much sense to me. Like, it wasn't worth it for me to try to do that. We had such a great thing going offensively. Like, what do I look like trying to get
27? Yeah, but you're a rare breed. A lot of dudes
are
like, let me get that 27 and put up 50 shots.
Right.
Vinatieri, still with a chance, has to go at least 5 for 5 the rest of the season to hit that 500K. He's a guy that helped Tom Brady win a couple of Super Bowls. I'm not sure if he uses the TB12 method, but you can use the TB12 method now on your phone. Tom Brady is launching a wellness app. It's going to go for $19.99 a month, $199 a year.
$19.99 a month?
That's the most expensive app I think I've heard of.
What?
You can get a free 7-day trial.
Are you serious? So from your reaction, it sounds like you're not signing up.
What?
I'm going to have to fight my wife to make sure she doesn't sign up. Because she's always telling me, would you see what he eats? He and Giselle, they're eating all this.
Avocado ice cream.
Avocado ice cream.
Sounds good. I like
my
avocado.
My wife's super healthy. She's always into the organic stuff. She's going to want to buy it. And she always tells me, like, oh, see how great he looks at 40? I'm like, whatever.
Like, what are you saying?
That's messed up.
Right.
I'll be real curious because I don't think anybody's going to buy this. He had his cookbook was $100 for just a cookbook, which was for all his recipes.
Did
now
they
he's
buy
going
it?
In an app. I don't know what the numbers
the
were
app.
In it.
They're going to buy the app.
You think?
They're going to buy the app.
A bunch of like overweight dads are going to come in and buy this thing?
No, I don't know that it's going to be overweight dads. I think it's going to be the demo you just
really?
Yeah,
really?
I think it's going to be Wise. I think it's going to be, they're going to buy the app.
You know what you can do if you don't have to make this money? Like, it's not how he's making his living. You can say, I don't want it to be exclusive. I'm going to charge $20 a month for it.
Yeah, why not?
Right? If it doesn't sell, who cares?
But Tom, like, what? Anyway, don't
get He's me very into the TB12 brand. Like, this is, and here's what's real interesting. He says he wants to play to his 45. I think he wants to do it because he knows it'll project him into this next life, which I think he's going to be promote his lifestyle.
His healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, if you're willing to do the things he does, you'll probably look great and you'll feel great.
Listen,
I don't know if I want it that bad.
Why
do I want to enjoy life. I want to enjoy a meal every once in a while that has some spaghetti and pasta and bread.
Damn right. But 3 weeks ago, I looked in the mirror and I'm like, you know what, Rob? We got to do something about this. Let's get back. Like, we have to. The holidays are coming up. Like, we don't like the way we're feeling right now. We're a little sluggish and lethargic. Like, I don't need Tom Brady to tell me that I eat too much saturated fat or that French fries aren't good for me or I shouldn't have – like, so for 3 weeks now, I've been living a relatively healthy lifestyle. I need to get RB19 lifestyle up.
RB19, let's get it going.
$7.99 a month. I'm going to undercut Tom Brady and Giselle. See how we can roll with that.
Let's do it. Let's start the app.
And by the way, the cookbook sold out online. $200 cookbook.
$200. I was wrong. I thought it was
$100.
Get $200.
Tom. I got
sold
no
out
beef
though.
With that. I got
now,
no beef.
Is it like collectors? Is it only like 1,000 copies? That's insane to me.
I got no beef with you, Tom.
More power too. If you can get him to buy it, it's all about supply and demand. Suckers.
Hey, Tom Brady thinks he might be able to play well into his 40s, maybe even 50 years old. He's 40 right now. Well, Kansas State head coach Bill Snyder is expected to return. Reports are that he'll return as a 78-year-old and will turn 79 at some point during next season. How old is too old to coach? Danny, you played for Bobby Bowden. He was 67 when you left Florida State. Raja, you played for Larry Brown when he was 69 with the Charlotte Bobcats at the time. Also Jerry Sloan when he was 68.
Yeah.
How old's too old?
78 would be too old. It would.
You think so?
I do. But here's what I'll say to that. Jerry Sloan. You know, I was with Jerry. I love Jerry. Like, salt of the earth type of dude. Man's man. Like, I went to go back to Utah to play for Jerry. When he left the Jazz, he took a couple years away. I saw him a few years later. He had lost what meant the most to him, mm-hmm. right? And he just didn't look the same. It looked like some of the life was out of him. You know, I looked into his eyes and I talked to him, and he didn't look like the same guy, you know? And so there's something to be said for that. So if that's what Bill Snyder loves, like, if that's what keeps him – you know, going and feeling fulfilled and having, you know, goals achieved, then do it, bro. Go out there and do it. But that's a lot of energy that goes into coaching.
Yeah, I think it's different for different people. Like Joe Paterno at the end, he looked too old.
Right.
Even Bobby Bowden at the end started to look like he lost touch with his players. He wasn't with me.
Right.
But I think there's an age, and Bobby Bowden famously said, he's like, I don't want to retire, because he's like, there's only one big event after retirement.
Right.
And he was like, that's death. Like, he did not want to face that. If you love what you do, do it for as long as you can. I don't think Bill Snyder's there yet. I think you can be a football coach and you can be the face of the program, and yet you can still have really good assistants.
Right.
His son's on his staff. He really wants to hand it off to his son. They had a deal in place for Bobby Bowden, which I kind of wish he would have taken, because Jimbo Fisher was there. And he was the head coach in waiting. And Jimbo was pressuring, saying, hey, I want to be the coach. Like, he wanted to get his opportunity. And they had a deal in place where they were kind of let Bobby be like this, like, more, not even head coach.
Ambassador but, of
yeah,
the
like ambassador of the yeah. program. And I kind of wish he would have taken it, because I still think you can be a part of the team and be somebody that players can lean on, more yeah. of an advisory role, mm-hmm. and kind of step aside but still have it be just as important to you. But, man, you're talking about guys who have been the head guy for 30 and 40 years. It's hard for them to step aside and just hand over the reins. So I think it varies from everybody. When he was 67, he didn't get that involved in every single play. He was more of a figurehead then, but it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
I think everybody has to approach that decision to, at different times. All right. Hit us up. Thank you for listening. It's been fun. You guys are real. I don't know how to transition to the end here really smoothly, but thanks for checking us out. Make sure you go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. When you do, hit us up with some topics, some top 5 topics you want to hear our top 5. Make sure and go follow us at Canell and Bell. Our boy Debo is running that account. I think people thought it was me, so they were getting a lot more hate. Now they're realizing it's him. I think they're interacting a little bit more friendly. Make sure you go check us out if you're not on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, all those other spots. Thanks for checking us out. We'll be back Friday with our picks and props. Is Canell a winner?
Not yet.
All right. We're going to get in the win column on Friday.